Next month, June 12th, 2018, my first ever book gets released. It's called I've Got Something to Say, and it's coming out on Feral House Books. To say I'm excited is an understatement. I am teeming with excitement. You know, our band has put out albums, many albums over the years, and it's always been exciting when each release is imminent. But putting out a book is a new experience for me and something quite special. This is a book that compiles my columns, articles, harangues, and general ranting about mostly music from the past 10 years, culled from various music magazines, and it's been in the works for a couple of years now. I do believe I started assembling it back in 2016 with my editor, Aaron Brophy, and layout designer, Ingrid Paulson. It was a project that turned out to be bigger than I had anticipated. Rewriting, editing, rereading, etc., etc. Add to that the 12 illustrators that I reached out to and who contributed work for it. Richard Comley, Damian Abraham, Gary Texali, Fiona Smith, Mary Fleener, Gary Dumb, Juan Montoya, Valiant himself, Michelle Away Langevin, Cam Hayden, Erie Vaughn, and of course, Brian Walsby. Whether it was comic strips or standalone illustrations to help depict the articles within, I am so proud and honored by the 12 who I am now forever tied together with this book. Not only that, but Duff McKagan himself wrote the foreword, another person that I am so truly honored to have taken part in this project with me, because, you know, Duff is the man. And of course, Feral House Books, an imprint that I have quietly been a fan of for many, many moons. There are already many Feral House books on my bookshelf, and so to add I've Got Something to Say to these titles and seeing the FH logo on the book's spine is akin to our band being on Touch and Go or Matador or Crypt Records for me. I can't hide it. I think it's fucking cool to have a book out on Feral House. So thanks goes out to Adam Parfrey, Jessica Parfrey, and Christina Ward at Feral House. And while assembling the book, combing through the many articles I've written over the years and deciding what articles to use and not use, I always, always had in my head for the cover an illustration by Brian Walsby. For years, I had the book's title in my head, I've Got Something to Say, and I had the person who I wanted to do the cover. Only problem was I didn't know Brian. I was simply a fan of his artwork and loved his Man-Child comic book. I had his website bookmarked, but was too shy to even email him and ask. However, one day, talking to Damian Abraham of Fucked Up about other illustrators, it was Damian who suggested I reached out to Brian. He had his contact, and Brian had even been on Damian's Turned Out a Punk podcast. I told Damian what I just stated here, how it was kind of my wish to have Brian be a part of it, and Damian, being the major dude and good friend that he is, emailed Brian on my behalf, vouched for me, and with that, I grew a pair and emailed Brian myself. He said yes, and he not only did the cover, but illustrated an article of mine inside the book as well. And to go even one further, Brian also ended up doing the artwork for my Three's Company podcast, the Regal Beagle podcast. So for the next batch of episodes, I will be spotlighting and talking to the various illustrators whose artwork graces my book. And, of course, I have to start with Brian Walsby. Brian's day job, as you will soon find out, is touring the world with the Melvins as their merch guy. That's cool enough right there, but Brian's hand is far-reaching. As a drummer, he's been in many seminal groups like Wax, that's W-W-A-X, with Mac McCann from Superchunk, the Patty Hearst Syndrome with Ryan Adams, Snake Nation with Mike Dean and Woody Weatherman from COC. He was in Shiny Beast, and even briefly in Polvo. That's some 90s classics for you. He's roadied for COC, and believe it or not, turned down a chance to play drums in Nirvana back in the day. As an artist, I've already mentioned his Man-Child comic is fantastic. He's done t-shirt designs for everybody, from the Melvins, of course, to Propagandhi, Torch, Big Star, Voivod, Poison Idea, All, Valiant Thor, and of course, Fucked Up. He's done album artwork for 7 Seconds, namely the Walk Together, Rock Together 7-inch, and of course, again, the Melvins. Any interested parties interested in more Brian Walsby stuff should go to brianwalsby.net. And so with this episode, I talk to Brian first, followed by my talk with Captain Canuck, Comley Comics inventor, Mr. Richard Comley himself. So, thanks to Blue Mic Microphones and Skull Candy Headphones for their support. This podcast supports Chino Locos Restaurants. If you're digging this podcast, please leave a rating and/or a review on iTunes. And in case you didn't know, this podcast is now available on Spotify. So, without further ado, Brian Walsby is the first guest for the first half of this episode, and it starts now. The Daniel Jones podcast is the best around. Nick Flanagan is Daniel's co-host. Hello for free. I'm Zach Lennon. I do sometimes. Jimmy in from fucked up. Stop Brian. Hang down.
Danko Jones has a podcast. It's called the Danko Jones Podcast. La da 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 da. La da 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 da.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, get ready, because the Danko Jones Podcast starts! No, no, no.
Hello, Brian?
Yeah, man, how you doing?
Hey, how you doing?
It's great to hear your voice and to talk to you, like, one-on-one, kind of voice-to-voice.
Yeah, it's nice too. It's nice to formally sort of meet you, even though it's through like a phone line. And I think, I'm not sure, I could be wrong, but that book that Michelle from Voivod had come out a couple, you know, like 10 years ago maybe. I don't know, time blurs. That World's Away book.
Yeah,
Arden book. I'm not sure, but I think there was like something he drew for you.
Yeah, he did.
Like a logo?
Yeah, 2 T-shirt illustrations for merch.
Right. And
yeah.
So for whatever reason back then when I saw your name, I just thought, and I don't know why I thought this, I was thinking that I thought you were like some like a Canadian industrial artist, like like a Trent Reznor sort of person. I don't know why I thought that. That's sort of what I decided. Oh, this guy, I think this is like a, kind of like a Canadian, like the, you know, like sort of the other, the East Coast version of Skinny Puppy or something like that. I don't know why I thought that. Anyway, that proved to be wrong as time has gone on.
Well, it made sense because, you know, when I got in touch with Away and he said, well, what do you want me to do? I said, make it Voivod, man. You know, like make the illustration as Voivod as you can. So that makes sense. But yeah, it's a little bit different than the what we sound like, our music. But being a big, huge Voivod fan growing up, I didn't care. I just wanted the illustration on a shirt. Yeah. But Voivod is still a part of the reason why we're talking is the book. And Voivod is very much a part of this book, or at least Away is, because he did an illustration for the book as well.
Right. I think he had told me that. Yeah, I've been a big fan, and he's. I would never claim to say that I knew him very well, but he's always been really nice to me. And in the handful of times we've hung out and met, and I definitely respect him a lot as an artist and definitely a drummer. He definitely has his own thing. Nobody really sounds like him. And, they're still a really good band. You know, they've like just totally done the impossible, actually survived without their, you know, main songwriter.
Yeah.
And somehow put out one of their very best records after they reshuffled their lineup after all that.
Target Earth. Target Earth was very impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they're the best band, basically, which is kind of funny because, like, it also reminds me of, like, how, like, in the last 5 years I've gotten really into that band Propagandy.
Yeah, I've noticed your recent uploads.
They're, like, so good. They're, like, these guys are quietly the the best band doing that. There's so much better. They're kind of like, I've never really liked Bad Religion or no one else. You know, I understand their place and things, and I know like that stuff is really big up there too. Because like some of my ex-bandmates from Scared Straight have been in bands that do really well up there. But it's like Propaganda are kind of like the best version of that stuff because they're like that with a brain. They're like, I don't want to insult anybody, but they're clearly, they're kind of like how Voivod's the best band in metal, sort of like.
I noticed your Propaganda illustrations recently are kind of a nod to a Ways Nothing Face era. Am I wrong?
You're not wrong. I totally ripped off in the Nothing Face record. When he did that poster and folded out, he did those drawings for each song. So I picked one that I liked and thought, that'd be kind of funny. And I spent a lot of time working on it, and the person in that band that I know is Todd. And, you know, and I thought, well, this is kind of cool. But then I kind of thought, afterwards, like, I can't see why they would be interested in somebody ripping off somebody they already really, really like and admire when they can just go ahead and maybe get that guy, the original guy to do it. But, you know, he's probably a busy guy, so, you know, I don't know. But
I just talked to him a few days ago, and he said that they had just finished recording the new record the day previous, and we talked about you, and he loves the cover of the book, and
cool.
Yeah, he had nothing but nice things to say about you. So, yeah, definitely.
Well, that's good.
Well, I heard you on the on Damien's Turned Out a Punk episode podcast, and you know, you spoke about the Melvins, but your connection with the Melvins goes beyond a working relationship. Like you were, as am I, a huge Melvins fan.
Yeah, I met them on their very first tour, and this is literally 1986. This is back, God, how long ago is that? That's like a long time ago. But they toured the country with this other band that I used to know from Southern California when I still lived there, called RKL, Rich Kids on LSD. Somehow they ended up playing with those guys. You know, RKL were a good band. And, you know, I met them then, and they did this massively unsuccessful punk rock tour with those guys. And, you know, everybody hated them, of course. You know, it was the polar opposite of what people wanted to hear during that time period, which was like, you know, super fast hardcore. Or, you know, the other thing that was really big was that whole crossover thing, you know, like, yeah. And you know, I like, there's like a few examples of that that are good, but, you know, after crossover happened, I remember thinking, man, it was almost better when people thought that punk rockers and heavy metal people were supposed to hate each other. The music was better.
Really? But, I mean, I know, like, you're from North Carolina, and COC are kind of the instigators of all that, in a way.
They pioneered, you know, this kind of thing. But even then, I thought they were better than like some of what was known as, you know, crossover or whatever. But yeah, they kind of took Black Flag and Black Sabbath, and
yeah,
it was kind of tweaked sounding, and it wasn't all super fast, gallopy, you know, like fast hardcore with Iron Maiden gallopy bass parts or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Kind of what speed metal is. So I met the Melvins in 1986. I had just moved to North Carolina because I actually grew up in Southern California.
Uh-huh.
And then for whatever reason, through punk rock mail correspondence, I just thought, I'm just going to move across the country for no reason, whatever. You know, we'll see how that goes. And I ended up there. I was already kind of friends with the TSC people, and I was fans of what they did, and I was 20 years old and had no responsibilities or goals or plans, so I just ended up moving out there. And then 2 months later, I met the Melvins, and they were a real game changer, and I stayed friends with them, you know, since. And then that kind of led to 10 years ago, them going, well, you want to go out with us and sell our stuff, and, you know, you can sell your own stuff too. And so that's happened since. So
when did you start going out with the Melvins as a music guy?
It was I hung out for like a couple of weeks during the first tour they did when they had the two drummer lineup with Cody Willis and Jared Warren playing bass and singing. And then officially working for them was the next record tour, the Nude with Boots tour.
Right, right.
And it's been more or less since then, I think. I might have missed one or two things, but,
right.
But yeah, since then, for whatever reason.
I mean, you're talking about consistency. I mean, the Melvins to me are one of the only few bands who have been supremely consistent with their output, like almost, you know, like clockwork. They put out an album that pretty much decimates any other kind of heavy music album that year. So I still wait for the new Melvins record to drop, which I can't say for a lot of bands, you know, that I followed for a long time, you know, like knowing there's a Melvins record coming out is actually just as exciting as like the hot new band on the scene's new album, you know?
Yeah, I don't know really what to attribute all that to, except that it seems like, you know, it's like a band led by somebody that has three brains, that's constantly overthinking every possible thing, and he's constantly has ideas, and he takes all of his ideas to the engine room, which is Dale Prover,
right, you know,
and they seem kind of fearless, you know, like, I think that's just sort of it. They don't really care what anybody thinks. You know?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
And that kind of shows in the presentation and whatever. And the fact that at the end of the day, they're a good band. You know, they're still a good band. So, yeah, it's weird. It keeps going. And you're right. There's very few. There's like a small handful of bands where you expect something. Like, you know, like when Voivod puts out their next record, I'm going to approach that the same way I would approach a Melvins record.
Right.
Or like, you know, when the last Propaganda record came out.
Well, Brian, getting back to the book, I mean, I did want to tell you that I had your website bookmarked for years, like for a long time before we started putting this book together. And I, you know, obviously I didn't know you. I didn't know if you knew us as a band. And I was gathering illustrators, and you were always in my head to do the cover. I wanted you to do the cover, even though, you know, we didn't know each other or anything. And then Damian Abraham from Fucked Up said, why don't you get Brian Walsby? You got to get in touch with Brian to be a part of this. And I said, oh my God,
yeah.
It's like you're reading my mind, because I've had Brian's website bookmarked, and I've just been so close to sending him an email to ask him, could you reach out to him and, you know, kind of vet me in a way, and which I think Damian did, like he kind of introduced us.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like I met him. Yeah. Yeah. I met him too. Being in his van, and I knew him, you know, I'd hung out probably half a dozen times, and then he did bring all that up, and I said, sure, and I did a little research, and I was like, oh, this seems like a nice guy, and that was literally it.
Well, as luck would have it, the week that I think I reached out to you, I also posted my podcast with Away from Voivod, and you listened to it, and you're like, all right, I'm in, kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah, I do remember that. I was like, all right, this is a nice guy. Obviously, we share some similar tastes and interests, and, you know, yeah. You're right, that's exactly what it was. I was like, okay, I'm in, I'll do this. And I think I also did that. The cover came out, you know, looking really good and everything, but I seem to remember that the other thing I drew, I liked maybe even more, actually, your whole origin of the heavy metals, the heavy metal horns or whatever, and how,
yeah.
I guess you read about how overplayed that was. And I remember thinking that came out pretty good because it was, there was so much stuff put in there in such a tight space, and it still looked good. I have this weird memory that it came out looking good.
Oh, that's exactly what I thought when I first saw it. I'm like, wow. And I don't know if you asked me, like, what do you want me to do with it? I think in the back of my head, I was just hoping that it would look like, you know, it came out of the pages of Manchild. And it kind of does. Like, it's really, really cool. Yeah, and I love it. I love it.
Yeah, I think the cover is good, but I almost think, man, that, I mean, you know, sometimes when you draw stuff, it doesn't always come out looking how you want it to. And I got pretty lucky with that for whatever reason.
Yeah, I agree.
It came out exactly like what I wanted it to look like, and I was just kind of amazed at how, that's a lot of work crammed into a still readable format.
Yeah.
And the story itself that you gave me was really good. So, you know.
Oh, thanks.
Maybe that, and made that easy to do.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And another connection with the book is Valiant himself from Valiant Thor.
Yeah.
Also mentioned your name. And I said, wow, this is amazing. Like, there's all these people involved with the book that know each other and are connected and are fans of one another. And we're all together on this project, which I found, very reassuring, because it's all we're all on the same team here in a way, so it's cool. It was really
exactly
nice.
Valiant, met those guys. They're, a lot of them went to a school in the middle of North Carolina in a town called Greenville. I think it was mainly him. He hatched the whole concept of the band, and my friend Charles Cardello, who has this company called Bifocal Media. We worked on a few of my books together. He's the guy that mainly did that. And we've done a bunch of T-shirts for people. He's friends with Herbie, and he introduced us. And one thing led to another, and we became friendly. And it's just kind of weird how it all kind of ties in.
Yeah, because he mentioned to me, he's like, you know, you should get Brian Walsby. I'm like, you know, Damien beat you to it. I'm already, you know, I already got Brian now. He's on board for the project, and it just made it really great. But I had to tell you this, like, all over the phone. I had to tell you that you, in my head, I had pictured your artwork to be the cover of the book. And to me, that is the best. That's the best part of the book, is the what I had in my head. Like, I want Brian Walsby to do the cover.
Right.
And it happened, and I'm just like, I love it. And everybody I show the cover to, everybody who sees it, it's always like, whoa, like it's a definite, it grabs you. The cover is definitely, and that's what you're supposed to do when you're trying to sell books, I suppose, you know?
So. Yeah. Well, that's great. Well, I'm glad you got that kind of feedback. That's, thanks for the compliment. And also, that's also very nice to hear, that other people like it too. So, thanks.
And another sidebar to what you've done in our collabs is you did the cover for my other podcast, the Regal Beagle podcast on Three's Company.
That's right. How is that going?
It's going really good. I just uploaded a new episode today with Derek Green from Sepultura. We talk about season 3. Season 3, episode 7, Chrissy and the Guru, and that was uploaded today. And of course, your artwork is what people see first.
Well, I'm proud to be a part of that.
Yeah,
I can't. I mean, I remember the show, of course, and I remember watching it, but I can't say that it's been seared into my memory banks the way it has been to some other people, like such as yourself. So you're able to. So I don't know how it works as far as like how much American television makes it to Canada. So I guess you must have grown up watching that show.
Oh, all of it. I mean, you know, we're bordered with Buffalo, so.
But you know what's really funny is, like, I'm not sure there's any Canadian. I can't really recall any Canadian shows that have made it down that I remember seeing, except for SCTV, which I've always said is my favorite comedy-based show ever, and I still, even though, you know, it's a very dated show, I still think those guys are the funniest people I've ever seen, you know, from being a kid. And
yeah,
that's the only show that I ever remember watching. I remember watching, like, the very early episodes when they first started out. It was super low budget, and it somehow made it, you know, down or you know, down into the States. And it was like 1977. I was a little kid. I remember thinking, what is this? You know, what is this show? This is great. I've done paintings about some of the cast members, some of their characters. I've written testimonials to the show, I think since then, I was a fan of Kids in the Hall, of course, which Lorne Michaels actually did produce.
Yeah, he did.
And the Trailer Park Boys.
Oh, yeah.
But it took me a while to figure out that that was sort of some Canadian version of being a redneck, maybe?
Yeah, out on the East Coast, yeah.
Right. So those are the things that I've kind of picked up on since SCTV, which admittingly is 40 years ago.
Well, we've had Robin Duke on the podcast. So she was on.
Robin Duke, short-lived cast member when Catherine O'Hara left.
Yeah. And she was really cool. We went to the school where she teaches. She teaches I think comedy performance or comedy writing at the school in Toronto. So we drove up there and we talked to her after school.
Right. So, she was nice. Yeah.
She was really cool. Very nice.
I bet she was a very, very, very quirky person, I would imagine.
Not with us. You know, we were pretty much, you know, she wasn't on, so to speak, you know, like, but she was cool. Like, she was really nice to us. Like, really, really cool. And, you know, we felt very relaxed and comfortable around her.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. I remember her. I was like, oh, I guess this is a replacement for Catherine O'Hara. You know, the other thing was, like, a lot of the references that were supposedly were Canadian versus American, you know, I never really picked up on that. I just picked up on that it was kind of bizarre and funny, and sometimes it would be kind of whimsical. But, like, you know, a lot of, even like the Great White North stuff, you know, after a while I figured out, okay, well, this is a spoof on, you know, Canadian stuff.
Yeah.
So it took me a little while to figure that out. I was like, is this, you know, I guess the closest thing in the States would be, you know, like Minnesota or North Dakota or South Dakota.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of similarities there. Definitely more than, say, where I live in North Carolina, obviously.
Right. Yeah.
But, like, I just thought it was all, like, just sort of, like, pleasantly bizarre kind of comedy, but way smarter than, and funnier than Saturday Night Live, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not like I was, you know, I didn't fancy myself as some intellectual 16-year-old kid or anything like that. I just, for whatever reason, I just thought they were way funnier, you know?
Yeah.
And it seemed more, it was less, SCTV was less about, you know, like, dope humor, I guess. Like, let's smoke pot and get high. Oh, that's I'm stoned. You know? It was just more, you know, it was more just, I don't know, whimsical and just pleasantly bizarre.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I agree.
Your podcast is going to be like, this is a dude talking about SCTV for, like, you know, 30 minutes. Nothing like Dad used to watch that show, you know. I'll be like that.
Well, we don't talk enough about SCTV on the show, so it's nice when we can, so, yeah. But, Brian, it was great talking to you, man. and kind of meeting you.
Likewise.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
I had a great chat. This is awesome.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity, of course, for being able to do the cover and for doing the other cartoon. And I was glad to be a part of that project. And hopefully we'll meet one day. Have a good day, and I'll be in touch.
Okay, have a good day, Brian. Thanks, man.
Okay, all right. Bye-bye.
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 You look so good when you get out of bed. You're always ready to go.
That right there was Brian Walsby, whose illustration graces the cover of my new book, my first book, my only book, I've Got Something to Say, out on Feral House Books, June 12th, 2018. Inside the book, as mentioned, there is artwork from 12 artists, and while Brian's is the first you see, Richard Comley's comic book illustrations are at the very end. Richard Comley is the creator of Captain Canuck, Canada's greatest homegrown superhero. Being saddled next to America, we as Canadian kids were happily inundated by DC and Marvel comic superheroes. My favorite superheroes growing up were Wolverine, Silver Surfer, Red Tornado, Black Panther, Batman, The Flash, Daredevil, Power Man, Submariner, etc., etc. And yes, Marvel did create a Canadian contingent inside their universe with Alpha Flight. But that was an American interpretation of Canadians. Richard Comley, through his Comley Comics, created a distinctly Canadian superhero in Captain Canuck, definitely influenced by Captain America, but, in my opinion, 10 times cooler. I also put forth the notion that Marvel was in turn influenced by Captain Canuck when the superhero named Guardian appeared in X-Men issue number 109 back in 1978, only a mere 3 years after Captain Canuck had debuted. So there's that. When I was tracking down illustrators asking them to be a part of the book, I never thought I could get Richard Comley to contribute. But attending Fan Expo in Toronto back in 2016, I met him, we exchanged contacts, and sure enough, he did it. I gotta say, as a lifelong Captain Canuck fan, I am thrilled that Richard drew a comic strip with me going back and forth with Captain Canuck. It's really supremely cool. These days, Captain Canuck is more alive than ever before through Chapter House Comics, who rebooted the hero back in 2015 after a successful animated web series through Smiley Guy Studios hit the public. In fact, Captain Canuck never really went away, though the original run ended in 1981. Over the years, Captain Canuck has returned time and time again. In 1993, Richard Comley relaunched the Captain again on Semple Comics for 4 issues. Then more issues appeared in the early to mid-2000s until IDW compiled all issues into an impressive volume called Captain Canuck, The Complete Edition, back in 2009. You gotta hand it to Chapter House Comics. They're handling a legendary hero in an updated, exciting way that's very engaging, and go even further, branching into novels like The Terror Birds, and as of May 1st, the Royal Canadian Mint has put Captain Canuck on a $20 silver rectangular coin using the image taken from issue 1 of Comley Comics from 1975. That is downright incredible. Richard and his wife, Evelyn, are starting up the Tri-City Supercon in Kitchener, Ontario, October 6 and 7 of this year, and it will be an easy chance to meet and greet with the man himself. I caught up with Richard Comley to talk about Captain Canuck and to thank him for being a part of my book. So here's part 2 of episode number 174 with Richard Comley. Hey, Richard, how you doing?
Good.
Yeah, so to have you part of this book of mine is, like I've been saying to all the illustrators, there's a connection with everyone that I asked to me and why I asked everyone to participate. Different reasons for different people. And for you, your creation, Captain Canuck superhero that you created, made a very huge impression on me growing up, as it did for a lot of people, an entire generation of kids, I think. And so, you know, when it came to the idea of collaborating with illustrators, you were definitely a long shot. I didn't know if you'd be interested. And I was so happy that you were, and I was able to ask you face to face at Fan Expo, to have Captain Canuck end the book, because your illustration is at the very end of the book, is just, I think it brings everything full circle in a way for me personally. And just to have you be a part of it, man, it's such a thrill. It's really a thrill. It's such a cherry.
All right. Good to hear it.
Yeah. I should tell you how I got into Captain Canuck. It was in the most, I think, one of the most Canadian ways possible. I was on a day trip to Muskoka with my parents to see the trees change color in the fall. And we stopped by to have lunch at this cafe, and they had a Captain Canuck issue number 4 for sale, and my mom bought it for me. And I just could not believe that there was a Canadian superhero, which I think you've probably heard time and time again from people.
Yeah, few times.
Yeah. Now, what made you start Captain Canuck?
Well, Ron Leishman. Most precisely, Ron Leishman. And I consider his contribution, I mean, was so important that I consider him the co-creator. I met Ron Leishman at church. It was either late 1971 or early 1972. I can't remember exactly. But and the funny thing is, I had seen Ron before, because I had gone to Red River Community College and taken the first term of a course called Advertising Art. And he had taken the same course, and he was a year ahead. So I saw him in the halls a few times. And but anyway, so I met Ron. He was a cartoonist. And by the way, many people have seen his cartoons, don't realize that they're his. But I see his cartoons all over the place. He has a website called Toonaday.com, and many people have subscribed to his cartoons and used them for ads and posters, etc. His style, to me, is I can recognize it immediately. He has a hilarious cartooning style. But anyway, so I met Ron. We would get together. This is like I said, early 72 or late 71, we started to get together. And he said to me, there should be a Canadian superhero, and there should be a Canadian comic book series about a Canadian superhero. And I wasn't into comics at that time. I think at the time I was working as a graphic designer, and because I did a number of different jobs. But anyways, I said yeah, and. We talked about it a number of times, and it was all talk at that point. And then I started to get really serious about it in 1973. And that's when I started to do the research about distribution and printing and selling ad space and all the rest of it. And yeah, it was all new to me. I mean, I had never been involved in comic books before, so it was all new.
So you credit Ron Leishman as the co-creator for Captain Canuck, but beyond that, did Ron Leishman contribute to the artwork or the writing, the storylines, etc.?
No, he didn't. What we did is the first sketch of Captain Canuck was done by Ron. But I redid it because his style is such a kind of a cartoony style, you know,
right.
More humorous style.
Right.
That no, this has got to be more in the traditional superhero style.
Right. You know right. What I
mean? And yeah. So basically, I redid it, and basically used his drawing, but redrew it and less exaggerated, less etc. But that was the foundation. You know, he basically designed the first costume. And really, his we had vacillated between Captain Canuck and Captain Canada.
Right.
And, you know, they just seemed to be the two most obvious choices. But I soon disqualified Captain Canada because, well, I can remember the day, the very day when I decided absolutely. Well, there, a couple of things. There was about three other Captain Canadas out there I discovered eventually. One had moose horns and also very, very goofy kind of cartoony style. And, there was a few others. One had a hat like Zorro. And so, you know what I mean? Like, they were, as far as I was concerned, they were sullying the waters as far as that name was concerned. But really, what got me is I walked into the Hudson Bay store. It would have been 1973 in Winnipeg, Manitoba. And I saw a sweatshirt. And that sweatshirt had, it was literally an old Superman drawing. Mm-hmm. And they had made no efforts to change it other than to remove the S symbol from the chest. They replaced it with a maple leaf, and they put underneath that, underneath the drawing, Captain Canada. And it was just, you know, basically just to sell sweatshirts. And, you know, I mean, it's interesting in some ways. There is some sort of poetic connection with Superman because Superman was co-created by a Canadian. And but yeah, Ron was busy at the time when I was starting to get serious about the whole thing. He was busy with raising money to go on a mission. We're both Latter-day Saints, and he was planning to serve a 2.5-year mission, and missionaries who serve for the church do at their own expense. So he had to go raise some money, and he went out west and worked. He worked up in north on seismic crews and all kinds of stuff for a few years to raise the money he needed to support himself for 2.5 years. He ended up going to France. He ended up learning to speak French very well, and he went to France for 2.5 years. And he left about the same time I was starting to work on the comic book. So I really seriously got into it in 1974, and started, you know, to put it all together. And one of my biggest efforts, which I actually spent more time on than I should have, is trying to sell ad space, because, you know, the big challenge was how to make it work financially.
Right.
And so, yeah. And then by then Ron was on his mission, and we stayed in touch. In issue number 3. I print a copy of Ron's, I print Ron's letter that he wrote to me, and I asked him, you know, just to write a letter, just letting us know where he is, because, you know, he is credited in the book as a co-creator.
Yeah.
And he wrote a great letter and did a drawing. He did a drawing of John, another storyline that we ran in the first few issues that was totally Ron's idea. You know, I basically just wrote, you know, the stories for it, and I did the illustration for the first few, and then George Freeman did some illustrations for it later. And it was very much like John of Mars, you know, I mean, that kind of storyline.
Right. Well, what money I would give, or maybe you would give, to get that sweatshirt with the maple leaf on it now.
Yeah. I know. Like I said, there is sort of a connection. That connection, you know, it's sort of, how do I put it? I mean, yes, Superman is really the origin for the superhero genre. And it was co-created by a Canadian.
Yeah.
And so Captain Canuck is sort of, you know, sort of fits in a way that, you know, it's somewhat nationalistic or iconic in representing Canada, and he is a superhero. So there's all that sort of I don't know, ironically poetic connection to the very first superhero that really started the genre.
Well, you mentioned that there was three Captain Canadas that you knew, so it kind of made the choice for you. But I'm gonna add a fourth Captain Canada, because I ripped off Captain Canuck when I was a kid drawing superheroes. I had my own Captain Canada superhero, and it was a complete ripoff of the Captain Canuck superhero that I would draw in notepads and stuff. And he was all part of a huge group of Canadian superheroes, all inspired by Captain Canuck. There was Yellowknife. There was all kinds of...
Your character was called Yellowknife?
I had a character named Captain Canada who was kind of the central character. But then the other supporting superheroes, there was one called Yellowknife.
Cool name.
Yeah, all kinds of ways. I have it in a notepad still. I kept it.
Wow.
But yeah, definitely Captain Canuck was more in the foreground of my superhero love than Captain America ever was. But now, to go back, there was only, am I correct in saying only 12 original Captain Canuck issues?
Of the, what we call the original series, I started in 75. So the first issue came out actually in May of 1975. And there was actually 14 issues in what we call the original series. 15 if you count, of course, the summer special. So there were 15 issues. And there was actually, so it was issues 1 to 14 and then the summer special, which came in after number 10.
Right.
But there was issue number 15. So there was actually 16 issues that were completed, but number 15 didn't get printed till 2005.
Oh, you're right. I kind of think I know the answer, but what made you stop Comley Comics on that original run? I'm assuming money.
Yeah. Real easy answer.
Yeah.
Ran out of money.
And so.
Ran out of funding.
So yeah. Over the years, I mean, it's gotten reboots and it's gotten restarts and reissues. And now it's kind of, I think, gaining some ground now through the Chapter House comics serial. Am I right? Like, how's that going?
No, it's going great. It has been sporadic over the years. So basically the first series ran between 1975 and the end of 1980. And even there was a 2-year interruption in that process.
Mm-hmm.
Then things happened over the years. There was newspaper strips here and there, and licensed products here and there. And then I did Captain Hunt Reborn in 1993 to 1996. And what's ironic about that is that when I originally did the series, I wrote the stories taking place in 1993, in the far distant future of 1993. Yeah, so there was a bit of irony there that I did Reborn. It started it in 93.
Yeah.
So 93 to 96, I did those four issues of Reborn, and then it was licensed to two brothers who did a 4-part series, and then I did 2 issues of Captain Canuck Legacy, which is going to be completed. Hopefully it'll come out next year. That's when we've slated it for. I will complete that series, Captain Canuck Legacy, which brings Tom Evans and Darren Oak together in hopefully an interesting way.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So, Darren Oak of the Reborn series.
Right.
So, yeah. And then I got together with Fatty Hakim. Let me see. It was 90... It's been about 10 years.
Right. So 04 or 08?
Yeah. 09 or something like that. Mm. I think it was 09. 09 is when I got together with Fatty. And, he contacted me about using Captain Canuck in his menus. And one thing led to another, and we had, and then, eventually, we started having discussions. He wanted to do something much more. And my goodness, we talked about it for months. We had numerous meetings, and because I had had so many people approach me about wanting to do this and that and animation and all kinds of things, and I had optioned Captain Canuck about 3 different option agreements, and none of them, you know, panned out in the end, kind of thing, you know what I mean? And so I become very not maybe cynical a little bit. So I just wanted to, before I did moved ahead with him, with Fatty, I wanted to make sure he had a really good business plan. He had all of his ducks in a row, so to speak. And not until then did both of us sign on the dotted line. And you know, in the end, I'm glad we went to all that effort, because that's one of the reasons why where we're at. Fatty's been the best of anybody I've dealt with over the years. I mean, he's got the passion, he's got the imagination, he's got the brains, you know, to be able to pull this off, and he's got the connections now too. So no, it's working out very well. I really think we're here now. You know, there, I don't think we're going to see any more interruptions in the comic book series, and there's all kinds of things in the works, you know, and a live action TV series, an animated TV series, both are in the works. Lots of books and comic books in the pipeline. So no, it's been it has worked. It, you know, it only took me 35 years to find him.
So, right.
Yeah, something like that. Something like 35 years. It's working out.
Well, yeah, I mean, I noticed there's like novels now, like for young readers, like the Terror Birds and all kinds of offshoots of the comic book. Now, my question that I think a lot of people want to know, and you know, you are the creator of something that has, you know, gone forth and spread its wings. So how do you feel personally as the creator, the creative instigator of this hero, when you put your, you know, your baby in someone else's hands for a collaboration or a reboot, like in 2004 and now with Chapter House? How do you feel as the creator putting it in someone else's hands?
Well, I think anybody in my position is going to have some trepidation. Mm-hmm. And I did at the beginning, you know what I mean? And that's one of the reasons it took us probably 2 years of discussion before, you know, we really started to do anything and, you know, get serious about things. The other thing, too, that Fatty proved himself, and he brought a really good team together, Kalman. And Paul Gardner, you know, he did some great writing for the 2014 summer special, for example, and had a lot of great ideas, and you know, having confidence in their abilities and in their imagination was a big help. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I knew, you know, Fatty was earnest about updating everything. And even though I was a little bit hesitant about that, the other big issue was they wanted to change some of the characters. Redcoat, Quebec, Blue Fox, they were all male characters in the original series, and now they're all female characters. And that was a little bit of a pill to swallow. I don't have anything against women, don't get me wrong, but right. You know, it's just like changing the gender of characters that I had created was, you know, a major, major change.
Well, it's just, you know, it's your invention, your vision. I get it.
Yeah. And, but, you know, I think part of the help has been the fact that, you know, it's been a number of years, you know, and I've aged, you know what I mean? So if this would have happened, you know, many years ago, say within the first 5 years, I would have been much, much more resistant. Mm-hmm. I'm sure. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But you know, just life and maturing, or well, supposedly maturing. I'm much more appreciative of other people's contribution. I think it's a big part of it, and it's been fine.
There must be something very, very satisfying when you watch, an animated short of something you created, but it's taken a life of its own in someone else's hands. In a way, it's satisfying in a different way, I would imagine.
Yeah. I mean, I have to admit, the very, very first episode of the web series, which is very well done, and Paul Gardner had a big part in that, in the script of that, and they did a great job with the script, and that's probably the most important starting point, you know what I mean, is to have a good script. Mm-hmm. The first animation I saw was more full animation than what we used in the series. And, you know, due to budget and stylization, the animation was more limited, let me put it that way.
Right.
And so when we had the very first showing, I'd only seen samples of the animation, I'd only seen the script, and I only saw little bits and pieces. So I hadn't seen the full first episode. So when I saw the first episode and saw the limited animation style, I said, what? You know, like this. and I kind of ignored all the good things about, you know, the great script and the other things. I hadn't focused on that part of it. And now that I've seen it a number of times, I much more appreciate, the script, the great script and the effectiveness of the animation that was used.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the music was great, great music, and that's Fatty's doing. He just pulled off some real miracles, getting music that should have cost him many thousands for a few hundred dollars kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Well, I remember we were asked to put a track in as well, but I think the series had already kind of locked all the music by then.
Well, there's going to be more series.
We're game. I mean, I was immediately like, yes, where do we sign up? Where can we, who do we talk to? And that was another thing is how I even got reconnected with Captain Canuck was through Twitter. I saw a few tweets that was promoting this Captain Canuck reboot. I liked it. And then someone from Silver Snail in Toronto, the comic book store, got in touch with me and said, hey, we're doing this thing, this reboot, this relaunch, come into the store and grab a t-shirt. And that's what I did. And I posted about it and I grabbed a mug. And in doing so, I was able to speak to, I think, the owner of Silver Snail, and he had something to do with the reboot and the Chapter House reboot. Am I wrong?
Sure. George Zotti. Yes, he did. He worked with Kalman in the storyline for the new series, which debuted actually in 2015 with the Free Comic Book Day edition. And then the first issue came out in just a few weeks later, which is now in, now well on it, onto, I don't know, they're doing in series that they go up to issue 11 or 12, and then they start a whole new storyline and they start from one again. But no, George Zotti was, had a lot to contribute to the new series, that's for sure.
Yeah, it kind of, reminded me of Captain Canuck, and I kind of got super into it again. And so it was amazing. And then of course, when I went to Fan Expo and Comic Con, I saw the Chapter House tables, and I met you there and everything. And so it kind of came all full circle, but it was through Twitter and through a tweet or that I liked or something like that.
Yeah.
And so, everything kind of, it was a big full circle. Now in another completely, non-related to comics, you have something else going on. You are, again, you invented Captain Canuck, you created it, but you also are the creator of the Comley Crane, which I'm very interested in finding out more about. What exactly is that?
Well, my goodness, it's got to be 20 years ago almost. And it was about 20 years ago, I started to get into some video production. I've worked as a commercial artist all my life. I did take a course, like a 10-week course in video production, in just before we left Alberta to move to Ontario mm-hmm. in 1985. And so when the new digital format came out, I started to basically, you know, just help other people with their video production. I also bought a couple of cameras and did a bunch of video production. I did a Drawing from the Pros video series that did very well for me in the educational market. And in the process, I bought a crane from somebody in California. And but it wasn't a very good crane, so I ended up designing my own. And with the help of people who are much more mechanically minded than I, was able to develop a crane that we manufactured and sold in the market. Ended up making hundreds and hundreds of these cranes. I have a friend by the name of Mitch Morissette, who is a mechanical genius, and he contributed a great deal to the development of the crane. There was a few other people too that contributed greatly to it. So I developed this small crane. It goes on top of a sturdy tripod, camera at one end, weights at the other end, and you can get great crane shots. And I haven't made them now. I stopped making them about the time I hooked up with Fatty, because I just couldn't do it all anymore. And the other thing too is the crane market was getting a bit saturated with other cranes, and drones started, impeding our market too. You know what I mean? Like, people started, drones. Heck, I don't need a crane. I can get 100 feet up in the air instead of just 20 or 10 feet up in the air.
Right, right.
So, anyway, so the timing was good in that, I was able to kind of get out of that. It wasn't my full-time occupation manufacturing cranes, but it was a really important part of our livelihood for a few years. And we shipped them all over the place. We shipped them to Europe. We shipped them, some went to Australia. Most of them were sold in North and South America. But they were all over the place. And I spend a fair bit of time and energy developing it and manufacturing it, because at the beginning, I had a lot of the work done by other people, and then I realized, hey, I can do that. Instead of paying somebody else $50 an hour, mm-hmm. I can do it myself. Mm-hmm. And I set up my garage and did a lot of the work. In the end, I probably was doing 80% of it myself. I wasn't set up to do welding and some of the precision stuff. So I had other people, I had to farm that out. Maybe 70% is more accurate, the part of it I was doing, but yeah. And I helped other people with video productions, and my cranes were used in shooting a lot of documentaries and TV series, used by a number of channels. So yeah, I have one left. I have one left, and I need one crane in my possession, and I need to get it repaired. I won't use it.
Well, if they're going to do the Captain Canuck television series live action, the Comley crane must be used at least for one shot.
That is such a good point. I'm going to fix it and just give it to them. Say, hey, you got to use it. So I don't care where or how.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thank you so much for talking to me today about Captain Canuck. I mean, it's such a great story, and it continues on. And now I can honestly say that it is a part of me, because, you know, you illustrated me. I mean, it's just, I mean, I love it. I love it. As a comic fan, I love it.
Good.
So, thanks so much, Richard. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
There was a time when I felt like I was all alone. Then I met you and you turned my world to gold. No need to say it, no need to turn away. We have an understanding day by day. All I need is to look into your eyes and I'm okay. When the world gets dark and the rain pours down and everyone passes you by, remember these words I said, yeah. You are my woman and I am your man. Without hesitation, gonna love you all I can. I was down, thought I'd never have a chance.